by the summer of 2014, we will be doing right away and layout work for the system in North Pole.
Plans for natural gas delivery in the Fairbanks area. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, December 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a good harvest of Dungeness crab.
We came in at right at a million pounds for the fall season.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska,
and by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
More Alaskans are signing up as the deadline to enroll in the government health care plan looms. If people want coverage by January 1st, they must sign up by the end of the day today. As of this morning, more than 700 people had signed up with help from Enroll Alaska, which was created to help individuals enroll and understand their options. Tyann Bowling, the chief operating officer of the company Enroll Alaska, said more than 600 of those people have signed up in December. She said there was a rush Monday and the deadline was extended a day. Other navigators weren't available for updated numbers on Christmas Eve. The overall deadline for people to enroll in a plan is March 31st. The Interior Gas Utility is laying out a plan of action following the state granting the Fairbanks North Star Borough entity's request to supply natural gas to currently unserved areas of town. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, getting natural gas to more neighborhoods is a step toward lowering energy bills and reducing emissions.
That's a little closer to happening due to recent action by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. The RCA has granted the Interior Gas Utility, or IGU, a certificate of public convenience and necessity to distribute gas to areas beyond the city core, including North Pole. IGU Board President Bob Shefchik says the next step is contracting for design and engineering of a gas storage and piping system.
Concurrent with that is to work with AIDA on the financing package, and so that by the summer of 2014, we will be doing right away and layout work for the system in North Pole.
AIDA, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, is providing state financing options for gas distribution as part of the larger Interior Energy Project that also includes construction of a North Slope processing plant to supply gas for transportation by truck to Fairbanks. The gas will feed the IGU and facilities operated by private energy company Fairbanks Natural Gas, which serves the core area of town. The commission chose the IGU over FNG to expand service into medium-density areas of the borough. FNG has 30 days from the RCA's December 20th order to appeal. Company President Dan Britton says no decision has been made.
I mean, ultimately, we want to see the community get more increased level of gas. We'll look at whether or not there's any reason we should appeal a decision. You know, we've got lots of work to do in our existing service territory. I think there's still room for cooperation between the two entities, and you know, we'll see what we can do.
FNG and IGU representatives battled bitterly during a three-week hearing on their competing gas distribution proposals this fall, but IGU's Shefchik agrees it's time to get along.
There's no question of that. At a minimum, we need to coordinate transmission lines and storage for the protection of gas supply for the entire community. More realistically, sharing of services and possibly overlapping of things like engineering or standards would be things that we would look to do, and I've already reached out to FNG, and they're interested in continuing the discussion on how we can work together.
Shefchik says the two utilities can support each other by offering backup storage in the event one suffers a gas shortage. Shefchik says the IGU's first year of construction will involve laying up to 100 miles of distribution pipe in North Pole.
Starting in North Pole, the city proper, and then followed by the subdivisions outside of North Pole. And so the goal would be we would be laying pipe the summer of 15 in anticipation of conversions in 2016.
First gas is expected to flow by late 2015, but Shefchik suspects few customers will convert their heating systems until spring 2016. Gas is targeted to equate to $2 a gallon heating oil and burn far cleaner than wood. The IGU's six-year build-out plan includes laying 600 miles of distribution piping from Eielson Air Force Base southeast of town to Chena Ridge west of Fairbanks at a cost of $600 million. Shefchik also identifies upcoming steps not related to construction, including application for rate regulation by the RCA.
So that the public is assured that the costs that they're being charged reflect the most reasonable cost for a system.
As a public utility owned and operated by local government, the IGU is not required to subject itself to rate regulation, but the group has identified it as a key customer protection condition. Shefchik says the IGU's board plans to get to work following the holiday. The group's next meeting is scheduled for January 7th. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Two government bodies on the Kenai Peninsula have voted unanimously to oppose efforts to ban commercial set netting in Cook Inlet. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran reports.
This time it was the Kenai City Council. Following the borough assembly, which passed its own resolution on December 3rd, the council's language was largely the same.
Opposing the proposed initiative to prohibit set nets in urban areas and continue to support sound fishery management practices and diversified harvest opportunities in Cook Inlet.
That was Kenai Mayor Pat Porter reading the resolution. It would later be amended slightly to say the council supports sound fishery management practices based on science. Listening to testimony at both the council meeting and the borough assembly meeting, that's been one of the big concerns, that the initiative puts management decisions in the hands of voters instead of coming from scientific study and observation. Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association President Rob Williams has called it ballot box biology.
This would cause severe harm to the resource management traditions our states have. We have a board of fish process. Like it or not, that's how we allocate and reallocate fish.
Much of the next 40 minutes was filled with similar testimony.
My name's David Martin. I live in Clam Gulch. I'm not going to get into the numbers and the dollars and all this and that, but the point here that's it's a sad day in Alaska's history when you got one group putting forth an initiative and for the people to vote somebody's business and livelihoods out. I don't care if it's the guides or sports fishing or logging or timber or coal or anything else. That should never come down to any government group or a ballot box initiative.
And just like at the borough assembly meeting a couple weeks ago, it wasn't just set netters who came to speak in support of the resolution. Paul Dale owns Snug Harbor Seafoods. He challenged the assumption that the drift fleet could step in and take up the harvest of sockeye that usually land on the beaches.
And that, I am certain, is not true. The local Department of Fish and Game thinks that we would be fortunate, on average, to shove perhaps 20% of the ordinary set net share of a Cook Inlet salmon harvest to the drift fleet and on to processing companies. So I just think it's a wrinkle that probably hasn't been thought through to that conclusion by a lot of people.
For their part, the council was pretty clear that a similar resolution would likely have been adopted to support any fishing industry, commercial, sport, or otherwise. But not everyone on the council thought this was the right time to weigh in on this particular issue. Here's Councilmember Tim Navar.
And I have a problem with this council, whether it's this issue or some other issue, starting to take a position on an initiative that hasn't even gone through the legal process. The lieutenant governor hasn't even ruled on it, and we're reacting to it. You can be more proactive than reactive, and sometimes reactive things get you in trouble.
Councilmember Terry Bookey countered that on this issue, the council could sort of have it both ways.
In this particular instance, I believe that the council is reacting proactively. But I think this is one of those instances where the city of Kenai needs to speak loudly and they need to speak clearly that we stand behind the set net fisheries of Cook Inlet. And there is no better time than to do it right now so that there is no confusion of our support and our loyalty.
The votes of the Kenai City Council and the Borough Assembly are largely symbolic, but decisions that could have more tangible effects on the King salmon fisheries will be made when the Board of Fish meets in Anchorage in February. Reporting in Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Christmas memory of a day that kept giving.
The operator came online and repeatedly tried to connect me. only to find that due to the heavy holiday phone traffic, all circuits were busy.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Southeast Alaska's Dungeness crab fleet has exceeded expectations for the season thanks to a strong catch during October and November. Adam Messmer, Fish and Game's assistant shellfish manager for Southeast, says the catch was better this fall.
The fall season looked pretty good compared to past seasons. We came in at right at 1 million pounds for the fall season.
The last 2 years, the fall catch has been around half that. The increase comes despite a drop in the number of crabbers out fishing this fall, with 87 permits fished in October and November. The million pounds of crab puts the combined summer and fall catch at 2.6 million pounds, well above the projected catch from the first week of the summer season. This year's combined summer and fall catch tops last year's, but it's still well below annual harvests that have sometimes topped 5 million pounds during the past decade. The value of the fall catch was more than $2.5 million at the dock. A few areas near Sitka and Ketchikan remain open to Dungeness crabbing through the end of February. A number of small businesses are for sale in Juneau right now. They're all fairly successful, and none have plans to close their doors. But due to life changes for their owners, they're on the market. As KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, it's part of the life cycle of a small business.
Holiday sales are brisk at Hearthside Books Nugget Mall Store. Co-owner Deb Reifenstein chats with a customer about his family as she rings up a sale.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, she's going nuts.
Whoa, I'd go nuts, too.
Reifenstein and Susan Hickey co-founded Hearthside in the summer of 1975. Their first shop was located in the Merchants Wharf building in downtown Juneau. It wasn't too long before they moved to the corner of Franklin and Front Streets. Not long after that, they opened the store in the mall. Hickey says they'd both been teachers in the Juneau School District before deciding to give the book business a try.
We came up with this idea. It'd be fun to run our own business for a while. We always thought we'd go back to teaching, but we just really enjoyed the creativity involved in owning your own business, being your own boss. It was great. We've each raised our children running the stores. The flexibility is there.
Hickey and Reifenstein are retirement age now. Over the years, they've discussed selling the business and finally decided to put Hearthside on the market in February. Reifenstein says it's time to do something else for a while.
My husband's retired, and he'd like to travel more frequently, and I've got grandkids in town, so lots of things on my bucket list to do still.
Unlike Hickey and Reifenstein, Becca Gagin is only 28 years old. Just like them, Gagin's at a place in her life where she's looking to sell her business, Bee's Bakery and Bistro. In August, Gagin gave birth to her first child.
With the new baby and running a business, I'm not able to take care of it the way I used to, and I want to make sure that Bee's is well taken care of. And right now, I'm not the person that can do that.
Gagin started Bee's in 2011, selling sandwiches and cupcakes out of a food cart in front of the state capitol building. A year later, she moved into a small shop on 2nd Street, though her kitchen was still a food truck in the parking lot next door. Earlier this year, she ditched the truck and installed a full-service kitchen in the shop. Gagin wants to find a buyer who can carry on what she started.
Someone who preferably has some sort of experience and at very least like a strong passion for, you know, cooking and baking and running and people skills.
Hearthside and Bee's are two of a handful of businesses known to be for sale in the capital city right now. Others include the Southeast Waffle Company in Ock Bay and Rainy Retreat Books downtown. Ian Grant is Assistant State Director for the Alaska Small Business Development Center, part of the University of Alaska Anchorage.
There's probably other businesses that aren't publicly for sale that are also happening right now.
Grant says businesses, especially small businesses, have life cycle stages. He calls them the think, launch, grow, reinvent, and exit stages. The Small Business Development Center works with owners on strategies for each of these stages. For instance, he would help an owner get their books in order and come up with a plan to keep the business running while it's for sale.
A lot of what becomes overwhelming for businesses that are starting to sell is that they don't have a team working with them to do that. So when they go to sell the business, a life event happens. And then when you go to sell a business, that life event is taking up your time and it becomes even more difficult to sell if there's some kind of a downtrend in the business.
Gagin says there's still room for bees to grow, while Hickey and Reifenstein say Hearthside is as strong as it's ever been. Besides books, they also sell a fair amount of children's toys. Hickey says the internet has also leveled the playing field for independent bookstores competing with big box booksellers.
There is a huge resurgence now of growth in the independent bookstores in this country. It's growing again, and it's really exciting to see.
Hickey, Reifenstein, and Gagin say they're willing to hold out until they find the right buyer. They all say their employees are among the most important considerations when it comes to selling their business. Hickey says Hearthside is looking for someone who lives in Juneau or is willing to relocate. The bookstore is an active presence in the community, hosting author readings and book signings, and selling tickets for concerts and other events. Plus, Hickey says running a small business is a hands-on job.
I think it would be very difficult to live elsewhere, but that's the fun of it.
Bees just went on the market, and Gagin says she hasn't fielded any offers yet. She's asking $65,000 about what she says she put into the business. Hearthside wouldn't disclose what they're asking, but Hickey and Reifenstein say all offers are being considered. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Governor Sean Parnell has ordered state flags to be lowered on Thursday in memory of a former lawmaker. Former State Representative Richard Dick Gruhle died December 3rd in Anoka, Minnesota. He was 85. Gruhle arrived in Alaska in 1946 and later served on the Fairbanks City Council. He was elected to the Alaska Territorial House of Representatives in 1953, 55, and 57. He also served as House Speaker in 57. He owned Gruhle Real Estate in Fairbanks for more than 30 years. Survivors include his wife Patricia and five children. Flags will return to full staff on Friday.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Alaskans who earn less than $14,350 a year will not qualify for subsidies to buy insurance on healthcare.gov. They won't qualify for Medicaid either, as the Affordable Care Act intended. That's because Governor Sean Parnell decided not to expand Medicaid in Alaska, even though the federal government would pay most of the cost. A new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation shows 17,000 Alaskans fall into that gap. Samantha Artiga, a researcher with the foundation, explains who those uninsured adults are in Alaska.
All those adults are adults without a dependent child in the home, and that is because the state does expand Medicaid eligibility up to parents above the federal poverty level. And we also know that nearly half of adults in that gap are minorities, including Alaska Natives.
Are most in a family where at least one person is working?
Yes, 3/4 of adults in that coverage gap are in a family with at least one part-time or full-time worker. However, given their low incomes and what we know about work patterns among low-income families, most of them are likely in jobs where the employer either does not offer employer-sponsored health insurance to its employees, and in cases where it is offered, it often can be difficult for families with these limited incomes to afford their share of the premium costs. As such, even among working families, they can still remain uninsured.
Are Alaska Natives included in your figures?
The Alaska Natives are included in our figures, and we have done some separate analysis looking at the role of Medicaid for Native Alaskans and American Indians. While Native Alaskans do have services, do have access to services through IHS, gaining Medicaid coverage is also very important for that population because it would increase their access to providers. It's also important because it could help expand capacity within IHS and tribally operated facilities, since those facilities would gain more Medicaid revenues if more of their patients were enrolled in Medicaid.
Samantha, assuming people who fall into the gap are unlikely to be able to afford health insurance without subsidies, what other options do they have?
Well, the folks who fall into the gap are likely to remain uninsured. These, again, are adults who have incomes below the poverty level, which makes buying coverage on their own typically unaffordable. And even when they are working, many of them are in jobs that don't offer health coverage to employees, or if the coverage is offered, often that premium is unaffordable. The options they'll have moving forward are pretty much the same options they have available today, which is to rely on care through safety net providers like clinics and the hospital emergency room. And while the uninsured can access some care through those sources, the care they receive is limited in scope, and they often go without needed care. There's a long-standing body of research demonstrating that gaining access to health insurance is key for improving access to care and healthcare utilization. And we know that compared to uninsured individuals, those with insurance are much more likely to get recommended levels of preventive care, higher quality care, and to have better health outcomes in the end.
Samantha Artiga is a researcher with the Kaiser Family Foundation. Walt Monaghan is an Alaskan well known to many as a man of public service. He is the former Commissioner of Public Safety and the former Anchorage Chief of Police. Monaghan now serves as president and CEO of the Alaska Native Justice Center, but more than four decades ago, he was a teenage Marine spending Christmas a long way from home.
43 years ago this Christmas Day, I sat up on my bunk in Camp Pendleton and stared across the empty barracks. Everyone else had a better place to be that morning. This was my first Christmas away from home and family. So I drove off base onto Oceanside, then a small town just outside of our gates. Everything seemed closed, and not feeling at all hungry, I parked on the beach and walked out on a long wooden pier. I was leaning against a wooden railing, watching the waves, feeling quite sorry for myself when suddenly I was inspired and strolled back to my car, jumped in, and drove to a remote part of the base where some Marines I had trained with were stationed. "Merry Christmas! Who wants to go find some breakfast?" They all hesitated just a moment, but jumped up and piled into my sedan. We sat in a rather crowded Oceanside Denny's, ate the food that only 18 and 19-year-olds should eat, and when we requested our bill, the manager walked over behind a waitress and told us that the other patrons had chipped in for our meal. Dumbstruck, we slowly made our way to leave, but at the door we turned and shouted aloud, "Thank you and Merry Christmas to everyone." The room erupted with waves and wishes for happy holidays to us as well. Feeling a little better, we drove and explored the mostly closed small towns along Interstate 5 that surrounded our base. We shared coffee and hot cocoa and walked the beach until we got hungry again. Since we now had more cash, we sought out a fancier place for our Christmas supper. We ordered and ate the best we could afford, and when we asked for our check, our waiter brought over an older gentleman. He put his hand on my shoulder and leaned over all of us at the table and said, "My boy is a Marine and in Vietnam tonight. I can't buy his dinner, but I sure as hell can buy all of yours." Speechless for a second time, we looked at him with our mouths open for just a moment until one of my buddies asked, "Sir, then will you join us for dessert?" The smiling waiter pulled over another chair, and our patron settled in amongst us. An hour or so must have passed until our benefactor rose to his feet to bid us farewell. We lined up and each gave him a handshake and a hug as if he were a favorite uncle. With his eyes filling with tears, he exclaimed, "Tonight, you are all my boys." Our drive home was noticeably quiet, each lost in his own thoughts about that day that had started so poorly but ended so superbly. I dropped off my buddies, and after the hugs and handshakes and wishes of a Merry Christmas, I drove to Mainside, where all the payphones were. I had intentionally saved $8 worth of quarters to make my phone call home. In the darkened phone booth, I dialed our home number. The operator came online and repeatedly tried to connect me, only to find that due to the heavy holiday phone traffic, all circuits were busy. Finally, a circuit came open and my mother answered. The connection was really scratchy, not unusual in those times, and we spoke to each other, professing our love and our good health and, of course, Christmas wishes. But when I asked how Gary and Darlene were, she hesitated and said, "Gary and Darlene who?" "My brother and sister, your other son and daughter," I replied, confused. It was then when the woman on the other end of the scratchy connection said, "I have no son or daughter by those names," that I had realized I had misdialed. "I'm sorry then, ma'am. I guess I dialed the wrong number, but thank you for being my mother for a few minutes." I stood there wondering where I could find an open store to get more change when my 32 quarters suddenly came flooding back into the coin return. The phone rang, and though obviously confused, I answered it. My operator was online and asked me if I got my money back. "I did, but why?" I asked. She confessed, "I know I'm not supposed to, but I stayed online to listen." "Thank you, ma'am, but it was my mistake," I said. The sympathetic operator simply replied, "Merry Christmas, Marine," and hung up. My next call went through without a hitch, and when I drove back to my barracks, I was feeling almost as good as if I'd been home. I unwrapped nothing that Christmas day, but the gifts I received then, I still have, 43 years later.
Walt Monaghan is the president and CEO of the Alaska Native Justice Center. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, Casey Kelly in Juneau, and we had commentary from Walt Monaghan tonight. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. From all of us here at APRN, happy holidays, happy holidays. May the merry bells keep ringing. Happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas, Alaska. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. Public Education Health Trust, formerly NEA Alaska Health Plan, delivers cost-effective health plans for Alaska families. They help Alaska's educational professionals, from school bus drivers to teachers, manage their health plan benefits efficiently. Public Education Health Trust provides members with low-cost plans, more choices, and local control, advocating for 17,000 Alaskans and their health care needs. This message sponsored by Public Education Health Trust.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.